Welcome to another episode of Bulletproof. My name is Steve Stanulis, and we have yet another amazing guest today. Before we bring him on, I just want to thank everybody for making us a top 10 podcast. But it's not because of my voice or myself, it's because we have amazing guests like our next guest. Just to get into him a little bit, I'll give him a little intro. When things go bad, and when your door gets kicked in at 3 a.m., when a ballistic shield is the only thing between life and death, the people you never know are always moving. And today, a guest, he isn't a commentator. He's not a keyboard expert. He is not only SWAT, but he is active SWAT, which I'm super excited to talk to him about. He's a firearms instructor, body armor specialist, tactical master of a lot of, again, you could correct me on that later, Eric. This is the real world shit and not Hollywood. Eric Mikosh. This is Bulletproof, and here you are, bud. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
No, listen, thanks for coming on. I mean, I'm excited to talk to you about a lot of different things. Before we even get into the whole SWAT and what you're doing now, I will go back a little bit, Eric, because let's talk about, was law enforcement something you always wanted to do? Because usually when I interview, people in law enforcement, sometimes it's something they either was their last resort, or that since the time they came out of the womb, they were into being a cop. So, how did that work out for you?
So that wasn't the case for me. I don't have any family that's police officers. I don't have anybody like that. And to be quite honest with you, my dad left the day I was born.
Oh,
So
wow.
yeah. So I didn't have any of that, right? I had a mom that played both roles. I what worked for me is I ended up being a good runner, and I ran track and stuff in college. And I met a girl in college. She's my ex-wife, but her dad was a police officer, and he was always like a super down to earth guy. And there was a couple of influences, I guess. There was an officer in my hometown. His name was Jim Donahue. And I grew up in a town of about 4,000 people in Minnesota.
And you know, it's
And
funny just to stop. I'm sorry to cut you off right there, but it's funny because central casting, you couldn't have a better central casting name for a cop named Jim Donahue. By the way,
right.
just it's so it's funny. I didn't mean to stop you, but it's just funny when you said Jim Donahue. You know what I mean?
Well, and you think of like quintessential small town police officer, like that's exactly what it was too. So the name fits the
Yeah, I
face and
forgot.
fits the body. But I just remember him as one of the Jim and both Jims were the big influences for me. Where when I we'd be doing something dumb downtown, because it was a small town, so we could kind of go anywhere freely and not have a problem. But he would be like, "Put your bike in the back of the car," and he'd take me home, and he'd tell my mom like, "Hey, they were doing this," and let them deal with it. So that was always a big influence, but because of the running, I actually was a kinesiology major in college and was going to go that route. And then I met the other Jim, and he was a really down to earth guy. And the way he presented himself to the public and to other officers and all that, I was like, man, this is actually a pretty cool job. He seemed like he loves it. He goes to work every day. He comes home. He's always smiling. So I started kind of following that path and ended up helping with like a Citizens Police Academy and all this in college, and I was like, man, I really want to do this. So he was a police officer in Minnesota, but he had worked in Texas before, and he's like, dude, you gotta go down to Texas. So I ended up moving down here. I ended up getting hired, at my agency now. The town I grew up in had seven police officers. The town I'm in now has 1,600. So I wanted to go somewhere where I could actually do multiple things. And so that's kind of how I ended up here. He was a big influence for me. My intention was to come here for 2 years, get experience, then go back to Minnesota. I kind of dodged that bullet. Sorry.
No, no worries.
Just so you know, I'm on call right now, so if my phone rings, I gotta look at it.
Hopefully we don't get any hostage situations while we're doing this.
Yeah, for sure. That would be a good thing. So anyway, we came down here, was intending to go back with experience, kind of dodged that bullet, it seems. And I've been here ever since. I've been here in Texas for 22 years, and then done a bunch of different jobs, and I'm sure we can get into that, but been doing the SWAT team thing for 15 of that.
Once you became a cop, right? Again, here it's a little different, right? The NYPD and stuff. We don't, you know, there is a SWAT, but it's usually we call, and again, I had another SWAT officer on, but we call ESU, it's an
Yes,
emergency
sir.
service. You know, again, for, you know, I know people that listen to our other episodes, just the difference between SWAT and ESU is, or ESU and SWAT and a regular patrol. They get to go to all the cool jobs, which is like, you know, EDP, you know, violent EDPs, hostage situations, anything that's badass, that's SWAT, that's ESU. And that, you know, that's, again, if you're an adrenaline junkie, you know, that's SWAT. And that's what Eric's doing right now. So, again, how long were you, quote unquote, on patrol before you went and got transferred to SWAT? How does that even work in Texas? Because it's a lot different from New York.
So here you have to be in a patrol role to switch to any other specialized unit for 2 years, and then you can start putting in applications to go to other specialized units. I didn't go from patrol to SWAT. I went from patrol to a unit that is like a street crimes unit where we would saturate a division or a side of town and just look for violent offenders, look for people doing burglaries. We'd do undercover work where, or we'd have undercover guys, and we would be the marked presence for that. We would serve warrants, things like that. And then I did that for a couple of years. So I was in patrol in the east side of the city for 3 years, and I did 2 years in that other unit. And then I went to the DEA task force as a narcotics officer, which is kind of a weird way to get there. I didn't go to regular narcotics and then to DEA. I went to DEA straight from that street crimes unit. So I spent a little over 2 years in the DEA slash our narcotics unit doing plainclothes work. And then so about 7 years into my career, which is about average here, I went over to the SWAT team.
And so again, and again, it's great. And you happen to be in three of the most awesome units to be in, because street crime is great. I mean, you know, I had a little stint, you know, not much because I got out early, but street crime is a lot of fun, you know, because you're undercover, you know, again, depending on who's the ghost and who's buying or who's whatever the job is, that's always a lot of fun. Narcotics is great. You know, again, I wasn't a buyer, because I don't look like I'm a heroin addict, but we had guys that look, you know, we would tell you they're cops, you wouldn't even believe it. Even if knowing they're cops, you'd be like, what? And so again, to do that, street crime, narcotics, and SWAT, I mean, you couldn't ask for a trifecta better than that route. You know what I mean? As you know, in your career. So what was the biggest misconception for people that watch like TV shows or whatever? To real life. What when you first got there, right? Was there any misconceptions on what it was like to be in SWAT to what it actually was?
So one is, you know, SWAT guys are usually pictured as these robots that have no feelings and no emotions. That's one thing, but it was crazy to me. Like coming from that street crimes unit that was doing some semblance of tactical work, we would always have this th we'd always mentality like, well, we could do what they do, we could do what they do. And when I got to SWAT, the real crazy part to me was actually how professional the guys were, and like professional on scene, and how trained it was, and how we would train the smallest detail to monotony, where even now, when I look back at that, I mean, we would do rep, like a good example is reps on headshots on hostage takers, and handling the optic overhold on the rifles and things like that. And we would train those shots like over and over and over to the point where we were bored, you know? And even now, that particular piece is just like automatic, like when we're in close quarters and things like that. So the absolute professionalism, because we get a stigma of like, you know, we get two lunches a day, and we have, you know, hair gel on order from the city, and we get everything we want, and you know, we're prima donnas, and we're jerks to everybody. And it's just not the case. Like all the guys that I work with, they are down to earth dudes. They want to help. When we get sent out on operations that aren't necessarily SWAT level operations, just consulting or helping other units, how down to earth those guys really are. Like they're not walking in like they're the biggest, baddest, coolest guys in the world. They walk in like they truly want to do good. I have a joke I tell a friend of mine that's a doctor here in the city. I was like, dude, I could take any one of my guys and they could do surgery with a little bit of guidance from you. Like that's how good they are at what they do. So it's one of those things where like I've always wanted to be around people that make me better. I don't want to be around people that make me worse. If I can avoid it, right? So that's one of the really cool parts about it. These guys, like they truly want to make each other better. They don't want to just be these robots with their hair slicked back. They are truly guys that want to do good work.
That's awesome. So what was basically you get there, right? You obviously that's your first observation, right? All the guys and stuff and the training and all that stuff. So the first time what you got on a job, right? A first big SWAT job. What was that job? Do you remember it?
So we run.
And I'm sorry, were you what did you have a crazy it was like all right now, you get that adrenaline rush. What was the first thing you had gone on?
The first thing that we usually do is we run a ton of warrants for their narcotics unit.
Right.
And at the time, 15 years ago, we were running all of those warrants dynamically. So we would run like dynamic entry, close quarters, warrant service 4 or 5 times a day usually. So the first, and this is the first operation where I actually got to be like on the entry team that I can remember. I did a lot of perimeter work initially because they stair step you through the process of training, right? So they're not just going to let you be like number one on a hostage rescue like the day you get there. It doesn't. Could that happen potentially if you were the first one on scene in a part of the city? Absolutely, but that's not the goal, right? So the first one I was on was it was on a narcotics ward. I remember like everything was about like this, right outside of the eyes because you're just like excited to be getting to do like the cool thing. And as we come up, I remember we were throwing flashbangs and flashbang went, and one of the other guys that came over the same day I did was on a window team, and a pit or not pit bull, I'm sorry, a Rottweiler came screaming through, jumped through the glass because he was scared. So this dog's jumping out the window. We're making entry. I get in the back of the house. It's a bigger house, so I'm by myself, like having to call for support. And I just remember one of the senior guys like looking like the hand of God coming in from outside to come help me. It was just this, it really was a pretty small task. Like those warrants are monotonous and we do them a lot, but it was the first time I ever got to be like one of the dudes that got to go in the house. To kind of give you an idea of what that looks like for me is when I was in the academy, the SWAT office and the gym for the recruits literally are 5 foot apart. Like you, the SWAT guys, we would have to walk through the gym to go get to our vehicles to serve the warrants and go on operations. So when you'd be sitting there doing sit-ups as like a brand new guy that wasn't even licensed yet, these SWAT guys would come walking through the door, and there's a couple of them, they would always smile and say hi or whatever, but you'd just be like, dude, that looks like this is awesome. Like that's what I want to do. Like these guys, this looks amazing. So to get to be that in that situation, like that was the first real time that it was like super real that I got to be one of those dudes. So that
That's
was
cool, but no, I'm sorry, go ahead.
like I said, it was a pretty menial task, but like that was the first time I really remember being like, man, they actually let me do this for a living. I get paid.
That's great. No, so you had said something with that story, which again, a lot of people don't realize, that haven't been on patrol or haven't done, certain things. A lot of times, 90% of the day is waiting for 5 to 10% of the other stuff to actually go down. A lot of stuff is unfounded, right? So,
Yes, sir.
you go on gun runs, you go on, all these different things, and a lot of it is nonsense. So you tend to. On patrol, or you have the, you go on lights and sirens, blowing, and you're talking to your partner like, "Hey, what do you want to eat for lunch after?" Because a lot of times it's on, you don't expect it to go down. You're just like, "Ah, it's bullshit. Let's go do this." And then, so anyhow, you just said something that I found very interesting. So you said a lot of the warrants are very mundane, right? It's kind of, have you had a situation where you were going to a warrant? And things kind of went, south the way they shouldn't have. And again, what did that look like to you if something like that ever happened? Because not everyone is just like automatic, right? Sometimes you have.
Right.
So what was that for you, or did you have ever have an experience like that?
So we've had, honestly, we've had a bunch of different things like that where, and I'll be honest with you, nothing that we really do has ever gone as planned. It's just,
Right.
it doesn't seem like that happens. But, we'll have guys that, they're ditching guns or they'll be in the front room with guns and have to deal with that. But, The ones that are really interesting to me with that is that we're not so much that we're going to serve that warrant and that warrant goes bad. We've had it where the doors are super barricaded and you have to abort the operations and go to window teams and things like that. But like, I remember one thing in particularly is we were actually in the armored vehicles headed to warrant service, and there was an active shooter call out that came out at the mall. It turned out to be not good, but it was like after hours, or like on a Saturday where we don't usually work Saturdays unless it's a call in. And we're in the Bearcats, and they're like, "Hey, there's active shooter reports at the mall, and there's a bunch of dudes running out, fires there, and there's all these things." So we end up having to basically with minimal tools, because usually on something like that, we would show up with the whole cavalry, right? Like all of the trucks, all of the equipment, very ESU-esque, if you will. We didn't have that, so we were literally breaching metal on metal. Metal doors with metal frames, which is harder to breach than obviously a wood door with minimal tools, right? And we're having to do this for an entire mall trying to find this person that's an active shooter. Like I said, ultimately it was a bunk call and there wasn't anybody that was there anymore. And they figured out what was going on. It was mundane, but getting those where it's like, man, all of a sudden now we have to go to this other operation. That's the really crazy ones. And we'll get that pretty often with barricades and things like that. But guess to answer your question on the warrants, it's most of the time when we have something go bad, we get guys that are running that don't want to come out, or they've hidden really well, or they're the meth head tweaker that has figured out how to make a tunnel system under their house. So we're looking for them and can't find them anywhere. And then we find these hidden trap doors that are underneath furniture and stuff like that. But those are the bigger changes. When I say monotonous, they're all. Most of those warrants were dynamic and it was really clear corners to, get the room done, get the room clear. But there's still an adrenaline aspect to that where we're throwing flashbangs and we're breaching the doors and we're pushing in hard on these guys, and is so it's there's still an aspect of adrenaline to it, if you will.
Now I'm going to ask you one other question in this vein. So, and it could be SWAT. It could have been when you were narcotics. It could have been a street cop. It could have been when you're on patrol. We all have as cops, right? That one craziest thing that's ever happened, right? Whether it's whatever. I could if you and I were talking over a beer, and you happen to ask me, hey, well, Steve, what's the craziest? I know exactly where what it is. Hands down. What was your craziest experience, whether it was on in SWAT, patrol? What would you say was the craziest story that you'd share that's movie-esque in a sense? That
Man, I'll have
or
to.
make it better. I'll make it better, Eric, that if you saw this, on a show or in a film, you'd be like, get the fuck out. No, there's no way that could happen. And but yet it happens. Do you have one of those or no?
Man, I do. I'm really bad at recalling all this stuff. It all kind of blends together. I'll tell you a couple things, and they're three different types of stories, but they're all memorable stories for me. One, about 2 years ago, we did a I'll tell you the whole story so you get the gist of it, but I'm a rappel master and I'm on the rappel team, and the chances of a SWAT guy rappelling on a hostage rescue or rappelling on an operation are very, very low. If you live in Manhattan, if you're in Manhattan, there's probably a lot more chance to you have to do that. Like most of our rappel stuff is suicidal jumpers on bridges and overpasses or parking garages, right? It's not, we're not actually rappelling. It's just tying off to make sure that we don't fall when we grab the person. So about 2 years ago, we had an operation where it was a lady. She was having mental health problems and she was trying to, or she was threatening to throw her baby off of a balcony of an apartment. So I was actually at the vet with my dog, and we have an hour response time to get anywhere in the city. I live 40 miles north of the office without traffic. So I'm 30 minutes from the house, and then I've got a 40-mile drive to get to where I need to go. So we get this call. I look at what it is. I'm like, dude, this is rappel mission. Like, me and another officer that had left the SWAT team, him and I were like the rappel masters, and that he never got to do it. So I was like, this has got to be the time that I get to do this, and then I get to win this competition between me and him. And so I'm texting my team leaders. I'm like, dude, rappel, like this is a rappel operation all day. So they're like, get your stuff ready. So I hauled butt. I get down there, and they let me set up this rappel operation. So I get there in my setup. I wish I could show you the pictures. I literally took a piece of webbing around a center island on a third story apartment and like hooked a carabiner into it, grabbed my stuff. So like, dude, this is what I got. Asked another guy, I was like, hey, make sure this webbing doesn't come off the center island, because then I'm gonna go. And not controlled, you know? So
Right.
they launched the rescue. And to give you an example, so we end up explosively breaching the front door of the apartment. We end up using a taser to subdue the lady from a side apartment, and then the two of us rappel down. Baby's safe, gets some scratches when the lady falls, because she goes and tries to grab the baby. As we initiate the assault, if you will, she grabs the baby and goes to toss him, but the taser takes effect and she drops. The baby kind of scratches his back, but the baby's safe. And I was like, man, I can't believe we get to do this. Like, this is the one thing that I've always wanted to do as a SWAT guy, is do a rappel operations, and I get to do it on this hostage
Right.
rescue. So that's probably, like, I'll tell you, that's probably my favorite story. We got other hostage rescue stories I can tell
Right.
you, but that's probably my favorite one, because you don't get
So
that. And
that's
I
probably
haven't.
right. So that's your go-to, right? So that, I mean, I'm sure you have a thousand. I mean, how many years have you been on now? Active?
15 in SWAT.
50. So I'm sure you have thousands, but I'm saying that's when I say the story that for Eric, that's Eric's, you know what I mean? Go-to,
Right.
because you could have thought of any one, but that's the one you want to. I just tell you something. I'll share with you something funny. You remind me of something, but it's funny. It's totally different than what you're going to say. But I forgot about this. You just reminded me. That's why I thought it was funny. So we had a jumper on a bridge, right? And I was on patrol. And again, and I'm going to say something that you're going to know 100%. So if somebody wants to go on a bridge and jump and kill themselves, we can't, what are we gonna do? We can't stop that because. So anyhow, this guy was on there for like an hour, right? So I knew he wasn't jumping, but he might have had something going on. But and it's funny because obviously we had to stop traffic. It's fucking rush hour. So now because I'm there, I'm first on the scene, I gotta go up with my partner, and I'm pissed, right? That I got to do, because now, it's freezing. So we get to the top, right? So I'm like, Kurt, now it looks everybody looking up, it looks like I'm talking to him, like pleading with him. I'm like, you motherfucker. Like, two things are going to happen here right now. I said, either fucking jump right now, jump, go. Or you're coming back in with me because I'm not fucking falling off this bridge, right? And it's funny because I said every name in the book. And again, whatever, it is what it is, but it was funny. So we ended up grabbing him, right? We distracted him, we grabbed him, we brought him down. And every day in the next paper, the Daily News, it has this like where these big hero cops, you know what I mean, saving this guy. But it was just so funny because I fucking said every day, I told him everything. I was begging him to jump. And everybody's like clapping when we're coming down, like what we, it's funny what we did. But again, only because again, if you're gonna judge, and again, it's a terrible story to share because it's not heroic. It is heroic, but it's not heroic. But the thing is, like, people don't realize sometimes, like, when you had to sit this situation where that woman was gonna toss that infant, and that's crazy. This guy was never jumping. I would have taken a different tactic if I would have known, like, this guy was just attention seeking and what have you. But it was just funny because, again, we looked like what we did, and they made a big deal out of it. Meanwhile, if they would have known what I was telling them, they would, but whatever. But the point is, I just wanted to share that because I forgot about that story till, I thought about it because you had mentioned something like that. But anyhow, what I'm saying, sharing that is just that's what it reminded me of. But
So I got
I
another
grew up.
one for you. I'm
Yeah,
sorry to
please.
interrupt you.
No, please.
That reminded me, like you said, that reminded me of something. You were talking
Right.
like, is there this Hollywood thing? Like, if it, you wouldn't believe it in a movie. So I used to live in a different part of the city. And as I, we have take home cars, so all of my stuff is in my car. If we get called out, if I were to get called out right now, I would respond from where I'm at to whatever scene is
Sure.
active. So we get a call that comes out, and it's a cutting. So the crappy part is, a cutting could be somebody cut themselves with a knife and it's a medical call, or it could be some dude is going to try to gut his wife, you know?
Right.
Well, it comes out as a cutting with no details. And so, long story short, it was a legit cutting. This guy stabbed this lady like 37 times, like basically, like almost cut her head off. It was pretty gruesome. But it turns out that we figure out who this guy is. A couple of days later, we figure out where he probably is at. He's at his, what I guess, mistress's or new girlfriend's house or whatever it was. So we get there and it's super quiet. There's nothing going on. And we're kind of talking like, do you think this guy's in here? I was like, the guy's wanted. He's probably killed himself already. Like, there's no noise. There's no, this, no signs. At the time, we didn't have all the tech we have now, right? So we get there and we're setting up on the house, and all of a sudden we hear a gunshot, and we're like, okay, well, he didn't kill himself, but he just killed himself. And so this is a cut and dry thing. Guy stabbed the lady 37 times, right? Like, it's he would have probably done everybody a favor. Sorry to sound so crass,
No, I got you.
but he probably would have done everybody a favor. The problem was, is he couldn't even do that right. So he shot himself in the head with a 22 and it lodged in his nasal cavity and he didn't die. So he decided that he was going to fight it out with us. So long story short, he ends up shooting at us like 85 times. It threw it different windows and all this stuff. Well, we end up using the chemical irritants, and we put a ton of them in there. Like, I mean, without having to explain what it is, but like 87 launchable gas rounds and a bunch of handheld munitions, right? So it ends up not working. He hides in the bathroom. Well, there's a video of this on YouTube, where I'm running a shield and we're trying to get munitions in a second story. And in the video, and the news is what makes this great, is the news is like, oh, the guy's at the window. He's throwing the munitions back out at the officers, blah, blah, blah. And I'm kind of hunkered down. Well, what it actually is my partner cannot throw to save his life. And he cannot get this in the window. And I'm rolling over laughing, saying, dude, can you please get this done? And I'm like cracking up laughing.
That's
And,
awesome.
but the news is like, this guy is doing all this stuff. He's throwing this gas out. The officers are in danger. And not, we absolutely were in danger, but the funny part was, is that like, if you actually zoomed in, all you could see was me cracking up laughing at the fact my partner
That's
could not
great.
get the crap and it could not get this thing in the window.
That's great.
Long story short, the guy ends up shooting at us a bunch. He ends up coming out. He ends up being somewhat aggressive. So we end up hitting him with like a less lethal round and taking him into custody. Then he ends up going to jail. He's in jail for life. But it was one of those things where like, this guy would not stop. He tried to shoot himself a second time. It was probably one of the more active things of my career, other than some, riot control stuff and things like that. But that was a really interesting story.
Isn't that always the way of these fucking guys? It's always those guys, right? That it's
Yeah.
always, you always say good die young, but it's so factual. So the guy fucking shot himself and he got stuck in his nasal cavity. So and he still had the bandwidth to fucking get up and start shooting at you guys and right? And then still come
Yeah.
out as a fighter. Meanwhile, if that was me, I'd be one shot in my head would be fucking.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Even
Exactly.
if
It
I
just
shot
didn't.
myself the same exact way he did, I would one shot somehow it would have got through my navel cavity,
Yeah.
cavity and hit me, hit the my brain. But it's
Right.
always those guys, and you know what I'm talking about. But
100%.
yeah, it's funny. So now again, just not to throw back at me. So I'm involved in a lot of filmmaking and producing and different things, right? As the reason why I'm saying that is somebody who's in SWAT, right? What's Hollywood's worst tactical mistake that they always show that you could say that you see that you could say there's no fucking way in real life that would be either doable, acceptable, tactic wise, it's just terrible. What would you say that would be?
I'll tell you two things that bother me. One, and this probably bothers me the most. This isn't a tactic, but it still bothers the shit out of me, is when they use guns that don't have sights on them and try to look cool. Like they'll be holding rifles up, the rifles don't have sights on them at all, and they're like, they're trying to pretend like these guys are awesome, but I'm like, the guns don't have sights. This doesn't even make sense. Other than that, it's a lot of like using tools that I know those tools don't do that function. Like there's one, it's in the show about LA SWAT. I love those guys. I got friends over there. But they use this tool that's like almost like a grappling hook, and I don't want to say it by name because we use it too. I just don't want to like cause any
Yeah, sure.
controversy with that. But the way they use it in the show is not how it really works, and it like the person can't be at a sprint and stuff. But we've used it. We were the first SWAT team to actually deploy that on operation. But you know, it's that kind of stuff, like using a tool that is not intended how to be it, how it should be used. We get a lot of that, or I see a lot of that. I see a lot of like hostage rescue tactics that aren't necessarily work, that wouldn't necessarily work, or it's over dramatized. And I get that you have to do that. You want to make the show sell.
Right.
But I think the bigger part of it is that it's really just the tools and how they implement the tools. And you're like, well, that wouldn't even do that. That gun wouldn't do that. The gun wouldn't blow the guy 10 foot back, like that, things like that, you know?
I always used to like when people would hold the gun like this, like to be cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So that's how it comes out of the
Yeah.
box.
I'm like, you know what I mean? When they always, I always thought that, again, there's so many. I mean, I could, but I don't really, believe it or not, I don't watch too many police shows, only because sometimes I find them so ridiculous. But what I now I get, you became a trainer too. You obviously within SWAT. How did that come about? Well, what else? Let's do that. Let's go through, so we don't have to go through each one. What is Eric doing now? In his career, you're active SWAT, but what else are you focusing on, and what are you doing on the side to enhance your career at, or help out other officers or civilians? What is that you're doing right now? Because you have a great resume, so I'd rather hear it from you.
So obviously on the actual work side, I do a bunch of training. But so we have a requirement on the SWAT team that if you're going to be on the SWAT team, you have to be a state certified instructor. And you have to be a state certified firearms instructor. It's a non-negotiable. You don't have to have that when you show up, but you have to have it within a few years of being there. So it's a requirement of my job to teach, right? It's not so much that I wanted to teach, even though I do. It's a requirement. So like today or this whole week, we're teaching the recruits in officer survival school, where it's just mostly high risk stuff, building searches and officer down rescue and things like that. So we're not just training ourselves, right? Like right now we're training the county SWAT team for the whole week outside of the officer survival school. We're also doing training or putting on training for the county SWAT team. So we'll do that. Obviously training within my team, and then we got a couple of other things that I do. One, I'm the Region 6 regional director for the Texas Tactical Police Officer Association. Me and another guy on the team named Todd, we're the regional directors for that. Sorry about that. We're the regional directors for that. So we look for quality training, schedule venues, and provide quality training for all like SWAT teams throughout the country can come down, but it's mostly for Texas. But we get SWAT teams from you know, as far away as New York and Washington. We've had guys from Vancouver that come down. So that's one of the things I do. And then I'm on the board of directors for a place called the American Warrior Association. That's actually a pretty cool story on how I got involved with that. But basically, what we've done with that is that was designed to help with moral injury and PTSD for veterans and first responders. And from that, and here in my city, we were the first of its kind. We started a program called the R3 program, Restore, Respond, Resolve. And so basically what it is we're trying to catch mental health problems in law enforcement before they become mental health problems. So a big push of it is to start with the recruits in the academy and letting them know that, like, my big thing is, like, I'm not a huge believer in therapy. I'm a big believer in community, and I'm a big believer in stuff like this. Like, you and I sit down, we drink a whiskey or a beer. I tell you about the time I found a dead chick under the house or whatever, and I get it off my chest, you know? So my whole goal is to normalize checking on your friends. 'Cause like, you know, you've been around long enough. Like when I started, that wasn't the case. It was like everybody had to be hard about it. Like your way of checking on your buddy is we went and, you know, found our forgiveness in the bottom of a bottle, you know? And that's obviously not healthy. So now what we're trying to do is catch them in the academy and say, look, it's okay. Like if you see your buddy, he shows up to work and he's usually squared away, his uniform's tight, you know, and all this other stuff. But then he shows up and he's got bags under his eyes. He looks like a bag of ass. Like he's not doing his job. He's being real cynical. Maybe we go like, hey, dude, are you okay? Like, what's going on? You can like, I'm happy to go hang out and we can talk, whatever. Like, just know that I'm here, you know? And so that's what my goal with that is to provide community. And obviously we offer other, if it gets to a point where clinical services need to be had or intervened with, that's obviously an option. But I'm one of the founders of that R3 program. So that's super cool. And it seems to have been successful. So like one of the things we do is we have made it here in my city that you get a week of paid training time every year to work on your own resiliency. It's anonymous. You don't have to be like, hey, I went here and did this. You have to prove that you went somewhere, that you didn't just, you know, go sit on the beach for a week and drink with your friends.
Right.
But you go, you learn about yourself. We try to get a relationship with your creator, whoever that may be. For me and for the American Warrior Association, that's Christian belief. But we want people to feel comfortable to come and learn about themselves. So that's one of the things that we do. And then there's obviously different areas throughout the whole country that you can go. That particular one, I'll tell you how I got involved. And this is a really cool thing is I go to Vegas for SHOT Show. I don't know if you know what that is, but I go to Vegas for SHOT Show every year. And I was in Vegas helping a buddy, and a guy walk up with a Fort Worth, Texas tag on. I'm like, oh, Fort Worth, Texas, that's where I'm from. And they keep saying, oh, that's not me, it's my boss. It's not me, it's my boss. So this guy walks up, slick back hair, bolo tie, ostrich boots. I was like, oh, that's the guy, you know? I was the president of a nonprofit that directly benefits our SWAT team for training and equipment and things like that. So I was like, I'm gonna talk to this guy about trying to get a donation. Well, it turns out that he started the American Warrior Association. This guy's one of my best friends now.
Oh, wow.
And it was through our conversation that they included law enforcement in the American Warrior Association, and trickle that down a few years. And we had some kids in town. It's called the Colonial Kids for a Cause. They start a lemonade stand at like a really high-end golf tournament, and they end up getting money, and then they have to donate that money to somebody. So they donated that money to the AWA, and we turned that into the funds to be able to push forward for this R3 program. So we basically give you an all-encompassing system to work on moral injury and mental health. And like I said, it's a first of its kind program where we were the pilot city here, and it's a great way to deal with mental health where you're not dealing with it with city employees. 'Cause I'll tell you, like if I ever am in that position, I'm not going to my job to tell them I have a problem. I'm afraid they're gonna take my job away. Nobody would do that. So we provide that service outside of the agency and get you where you need to go. But we do
That's
it,
awesome.
do it in a way that we can try to catch it before it gets to where you're trying to eat your gun.
That's amazing. That's awesome. Kudos. Wow, good stuff. Again, mental health, again, that's a big thing these days. I mean, back in the day, we were all too macho or too we sharing something like that you're going through something, you looked at differently back then. But yeah, that's great. And again, it's never been more important with mental health because, listen, the great, I know guys that look like they have the world on a string and they're out on the outside, but what's going on in here is a whole nother thing. So that's very important. But to close this out, I want to do what we do every show. We do what we call a lightning round, right? So I'm going to give you 10 questions. And first thing that comes to your mind, no thinking, no, just first thing you thought of. All right.
All right.
So again, nothing crazy. Let's just do it. Let's see what we see here. So most overrated tactic gear.
Most overrated tactic?
Gear.
Oh, gear?
Yeah. Quick.
Man, I'm thinking. Most overrated gear. Man, I'm at a loss. I try not to use overrated gear.
Okay, let's all right. So let's go most underrated.
Probably using chemical munitions to dislodge people out of houses. I know a lot of places can't be as free with that as we are, and we shoot a lot less people because of how freely we can use it.
Hardest part is being a SWAT officer.
Hardest part, probably on call with the family. We're on call 24/7. We don't have off call weeks here where I work. So after 15 years, the call outs start to annoy my wife a little bit. So that's probably the hardest part as a whole. The rest of it's a pretty fun and cool job. So
One skill every civilian should learn.
how to the basics of how to fight. Because you can take the basics of how to fight and translate that into fighting with any other tool.
Adrenaline or discipline?
Discipline.
I knew you were going to say that one. Best leadership trait.
The ability to ask for help.
There you go. Weakest trait you see in young officers.
The 1000% the ability to talk to somebody in person.
Hollywood gets this wrong the most.
I'm sorry, say that one again.
Hollywood gets this wrong the most.
That officers are robots, and that we only blindly enforce the law, and that we don't use any discretion whatsoever.
If you never became a cop, what would you be?
Man, I would probably start a business. After knowing what I know now, I would probably go out and do something on my own.
And what year did you get on?
2004.
If you had a, I mean, again, I know your answer already, but if Eric had to become a cop today, today, 2026, and start all over again, would you do it? Knowing how the job has changed.
Honestly, probably not. Let me say this, if I could erase my memory and I didn't remember what it was like 10 years ago or 15 years ago, I probably would. Because I feel like the guys today, they don't know what it was like 15, 20 years ago. And the amount of trust people put in you back then, and that's, so I
Oh,
think that's,
how about the respect you got and how much people
yes.
backed you? And you know what I mean? And
100%. I will tell
so.
you, I'm in a unique situation. We're in a city that backs their police officers.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. Unlike where you're from.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Unfriendly
I,
where you were born and raised. You know what I mean?
yes, sir. That's if
That's
I
a
were to
whole other
go,
story.
yeah, I definitely would not be a police officer there. And that was because that was my whole goal, was to be a police officer in that. I wanted to be on the SWAT team in that city. And
Yeah.
I'm
No,
glad
I know.
I went to the city I did.
Yeah. Would you go back there if you could? They asked you to go to SWAT. Oh, you just said that you wouldn't, but I'm saying in any capacity, would you go back to Minnesota and be in law enforcement right now?
No, I would go back to Minnesota if I was started a business or something like that, and I was not in law enforcement. I would go back to Minnesota. My whole family's there. I would probably not live in the metro, though, to be honest with you. I would live in the woods where people couldn't find me.
No doubt, no doubt. Well, like I said, I mean, this was amazing. And again, for people that are going to be listening and now watching a couple times, Eric had paused. It's funny because he's potentially getting a job. He's got to make sure he's not getting called as we're doing this interview. So that's very cool as well. Eric, I mean, if you know, I obviously it's a little different. I mean, I asked all our guests this and stuff. If somebody wanted to find you, whether it could be just a cop that wanted to reach out to you, is there a way for someone to reach out to you, or do you want to not share that information? But either
No,
way is fine.
I'm happy to share that information. So obviously, like every other person in the world, I'm on Instagram and Facebook. If it's a cop and they want to reach out and they're interested in training, it's eric.mikosh@ttpoa.org. if it's the mental health side, it's eric@awa-usa.org. And then those are the best ones, or reach out to me, DM on Instagram. I want to help. If people have questions about that kind of stuff, I'm definitely want to help. So, let's do it. Let's see if we can get people better trained, get cops better trained. And we have a unique situation here in Texas that we get some of the best trainers and some of the best equipment and tactics in the country. So I would love to be able to share that with other parts of the country if I can.
There you have it. Well, Eric, Mikosh, thank you so much for coming on. I'd like to thank not only you for your time, thank you coming on while waiting to get your next call. I'd like to thank, first of all, our producers, Believe, our sponsors. Again, like we say every week, stay bulletproof. And if anybody fits the description of what this podcast should be, it's Eric Mikosh. Eric, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate your time. Stay safe. And, like this, stay like this. I don't know how much time you have to do, but every day, just stay safe. And thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.